Welcome to the Context Machine, episode 571. It's 571. I'm Brian Chaffin.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. And today we're going to talk about all the stuff Apple announced at its peak performance media event on March 8th. And while our podcast isn't really living there yet, we actually do have a website, loosely speaking, at contextmachine.io.
Oh, that's exciting. It's what, a new logo? And that's probably, that's it. But you can use contextmachine.io to reach out to us. And we do have that spiffy new logo.
We do. And also, today's episode is sponsored by Hunter Douglas. Mm. And we'll be telling you more about them later on in the show.
Excellent. That is all good. Jeff's been working hard on our site. Hopefully we'll maybe even next week, we'll get the show migrated over there.
That would be awesome. Well, if you look at it right now, as we're recording, mm-hmm. You would not think that next week we could actually have everything transferred over and up and running there. But we totally could. It's absolutely plausible.
Who's doing most of that work?
That's why it's totally plausible.
Yeah, because it's you.
Yeah, well, because if it was me, someone has to have your back.
If it was me, that would be an LOL goal.
Yeah, well, as it stands right now, we do have a website that is very bare bones. But hey, it's up and running, and soon it will be really pretty. But you can go check out our new logo, because it's there.
I did get the logo made for us. I got that done.
You totally took care of that, and thank you for making that happen.
Well, thanks for putting our site together. So, yeah. Anyway, yeah, we're apparently grown-ups. Fully capable of taking care of like things.
Yeah, look at us taking care of things.
Yeah. All right. So the funny thing is that, you know, since Dave and I sold the Mac Observer, I have not, like, I missed the Apple shareholder meeting, and I'm an Apple shareholder. Full disclosure. Mm-hmm. Completely forgot about it. It was Monday. Jeff Butts reminded me that there was a media event on Tuesday on Monday. So, oh, really? Oh, that's interesting. And full disclosure, I didn't even watch it yet. I was sleeping. I've been like in total vampire mode.
Well, on one hand, good for you, because you need your sleep to stay healthy.
I do.
I have to ask you. Yeah. And I'm asking from the perspective of someone that has already gone through what you're going through now, which is the first of each of the Apple event things that happens once you're not part of Mac Observer anymore, mm-hmm. and how all that feels. So, you know, after I was gone, the first keynote event that happened, I watched it because I was just interested.
Yeah.
And it was such a different thing for me watching without having to think about coordinating with everyone on the team, getting stuff written and published and then updated as we got more information. It was just me sitting there just watching to watch and making snarky comments on Twitter. It was a very different feeling.
Well, I didn't. I if I'd been awake, I would have watched it. I was very interested. Mm-hmm. I am still very interested. So I didn't actually experience it yet. And I also did not, unfortunately, get the chance to watch it before we recorded the show. That did not stop me from doing some things, but we'll get to that later. It is a different thing when you're not having to cover the event, to your point.
Yeah, it is. So it was kind of fun, getting to feel how these events are for everyone else. Yeah, sure. It's just kind of fun to be on that side some too.
Sure, that makes sense. That makes sense to me. But so what this event was, what we had the iPhone SE, an update to the iPhone SE in an iconic mm-hmm. design, i.e. nothing new. I found that mm-hmm. we'll talk about that, but I found Apple's own Apple calling it in an iconic design. It's just fascinating. And then we had the all important green color for iPhone 13. Yes, Pro.
The Boba Fett color.
It is. And then we had the new iPad Air, which gets the M1 processor. And mm-hmm. we had the very exciting M1 Ultra, to me, very exciting to me, and the Mac Studio and Studio Display. So what order do you want to talk about these things? Like least interesting to most interesting? That's what I want to know. Spoiler.
Okay, then I'm going to go with that, and I'm going to let you just tell me which you think is least interesting to most interesting, because I'm going to find this absolutely fascinating. So we're now conducting a psychological experiment.
Excellent.
Brian, please tell me, what to you was the least interesting announcement at Apple's media event?
And I think for that, we need the Foley effect for...
Oh, we totally need that.
Writing notes. The green iPhone, I mean, you know, it looks great, but, you know, whatever. Seems like that could have been a press release event.
Yeah, but they're in the middle of doing this whole thing, so why not announce a color?
Yeah, fair enough. And, I mean, you know, it looks great. It's a fine addition. I probably would have gotten that. I think, what did I get? Did I get blue? What did I get? I don't even know what I have. What do you have? Do you have a 13?
I have a 12 Pro, and I got the blue.
Oh, like a fucking animal. I'm going to go ahead and believe that. what did I get? No, I got space gray.
Who's going to fire us?
I got space gray.
You know, this is the first time my iPhone 12 Pro, this is the first time I've gotten a phone where I had color options where I didn't go with the space gray.
Oh, funny.
And I just found that blue to be pretty darn sexy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I didn't do blue this time around. I did space gray. Who knows why? So anyway, yeah, great. Do we need anything else we need to say about that? I mean, it's still the iPhone 13 Pro, iPhone 13. Now you can get it.
Yeah, and Apple adds a new color every spring, which gooses sales, and now we're done with that topic.
Okay, great. Next for me would be the iPhone SE.
Okay.
And it's not that I don't think it's important. I think that Apple having this product in its lineup is important, even if it's not the biggest selling device. It is important for Apple to me, I believe it's important for Apple to offer it. It has the A15 Bionic processor in it, which is great. I find it fascinating. So Apple's press release was titled, "Apple announces the new iPhone SE: a powerful smartphone in an iconic design," which is a way of saying that we're rehashing what we've done in the past.
All right. When I saw this phone, I thought it was very interesting, actually. And I looked at the thing as a whole. I looked at it from a holistic standpoint. And what I saw was a phone that Apple updated in a very interesting way. I mean, it has the current iPhone processor in it now. And this is with Apple numbers, this is a more budget phone.
The iPhone SE has, generally speaking, not had the latest, greatest iPhone processor in it.
Right. But now it does. So I thought that was really interesting. And keeping with an older body style, I looked at that as this is Apple figuring out where they can save money so that they can make the phone as powerful as possible. Yeah. So,
and I mean, and they're barely scraping by. So they need to shave those pennies off where they can.
See, totally makes sense. Okay. Now this phone, when I look at it, I'm like, holy crap, Apple just took the phone that typically we look at as the old phone that they're selling for cheaper in essence. And they made it a modern phone. It's a current phone. It just happens to use some body parts that are older and presumably super cheap for them at this point. And this is an important phone because there's a market that's really big outside the United States, big shock for a lot of people. And this is a phone that sells well in a lot of these markets where people don't have as much money. Well, so Apple just made a phone.
Like smaller phones too.
Yeah, but it's not that much smaller. If you want smaller, you go with the mini. Fair. So, I mean, it sells well in the United States. It's an important product outside the United States. And now it's a product that, for me, it's making a statement about people that are living in areas where getting an iPhone Pro just simply is not going to be feasible for them because, you know, money or whatever. Now they have something that has 5G, even though it doesn't have mmWave. It has an A15 processor. It's an up-to-date phone, which means Apple is okay selling a phone that they know people are going to buy today and still have 4 years from now.
That is all fair. By the way, I had forgotten that the iPhone 13 mini was a thing. Completely forgotten. I had to look it up just to make sure you weren't screwing with me while you were talking.
See, now I'm going to have to figure out places to do that. You know, I'll just say things with absolute conviction and authority, and you'd be like, yeah. And then later on, we'll have a listener let you know that I was totally screwing with you.
Yeah, this sounds like a fantastic plan. And to your point, by the way, you're right. Those who want a smaller phone would probably be happier with the mini than the SE. Everything you just talked about, having that processor in this less expensive device, less camera, by the way, a lot less camera than in the 13 Pro, the 13 mini, or the 13, or the 13 Pro, let alone the 13 Pro Max. All of that is spot on. And while I do hold that this was the second least important thing that Apple announced, the second least interesting thing that Apple announced, that doesn't make it uninteresting.
Okay. Fair enough. I accept your apology.
First of all, Stephen Colbert and I have a real problem with you taking our jokes at. There. Second of all, we weren't even arguing.
No, but it was the perfect place to drop that line.
It was. I gotta give you that. How much does this thing cost? This 13 SE?
$429, I believe, $429.
That is a lot more affordable for a lot of people. And when you throw in what you were talking about, you know, like being on a budget, but wanting a processor that's going to give you some lifespan on your device, that is just a lot more affordable. Don't get me wrong. I understand that for a lot of people, that's still very unaffordable and it's a luxury. Mm-hmm. But it is more affordable.
Yes. All right. Before we move on, I just want to point out for you that I thought it was really interesting in the keynote when they were talking about this phone specifically.
You're about to be saying something that wasn't in the keynote. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to say this with conviction. I just thought I thought it was fascinating that they actually addressed that this is a phone they expect people to hold on to for years.
Oh,
because they said that something basically to that effect. And then the clowns came out.
Outstanding. Outstanding. All right. The next least interesting thing, but again, not uninteresting to me, is the iPad Air. It's all rather, basically they stuck the M1 in the iPad Air.
Yeah.
Which is great.
It's great. And now we have an iPad Air and an iPad that make it really hard to justify an iPad Pro for a lot of people.
Right.
Like if someone came up to me today and said, "Hey, Jeff, I just need an all around powerful, really good iPad to do just all the different things that I'm going to do. What would you recommend?" And I would say, you need to buy the new iPad Air.
Yeah.
Same. And save yourself a lot of money unless you need the big screen. And of course, there are other things that go along with the iPad Pro. But for the average user, USB-C isn't going to be that important. The higher quality display isn't going to make that much of a difference.
Would unify around a single connector? I hate having the different connectors. It's one thing when it's like transition stuff. Like, right, this is the first device that's going to have USB-C. You know, and obviously we need to, like, as we're rotating in new devices, everything's going to switch over to USB-C. But instead, what Apple does is they keep Lightning going.
Well, Brian, I think we're in a long transition phase with iPads. And at some point, probably in the next couple years, depending on how long it really takes Apple to transition through everything they want to do, all iPads will have USB-C and Lightning will be gone.
That should have already started. I don't understand why iPad Air with an M1 processor has Lightning.
I have a hypothesis on that.
Okay.
And it's because if they put USB-C on the iPad Air today, that it makes it even harder to justify an iPad Pro. So they're in the awkward transition phase where they have to create artificial differences between machines.
All right, fair enough. I mean, there are other differences. I think the bezel is bigger on the iPad Air. Is the display smaller too?
Yeah, it's the smaller display, and it does Touch ID. There are several differences. I'm pretty sure it's Touch ID, not Face ID on this one.
Let me do a little find Touch ID. Yep, you are correct. I just got last week, by the way, I just got an iPad Mini. Sixth generation, the current one.
Oh, I want one of those so bad.
And it's weird having to remember to go. I mean, like, the Touch ID in the power button is really clever, but it's actually extraordinarily clever, but it's weird going back and forth between that and my iPad Pro with Face ID. Face ID is better than Touch ID, and having the different experience is frustrating to me. I realize that most people probably don't have an iPad Pro and an iPad Mini, that they're both, and they're using them both. I realize that. I'm not representative.
Yeah, but they probably have an iPhone and an iPad, and so they're using Face ID on their iPhone.
Do all current iPhones have Face ID?
No.
I didn't think so.
No.
Yeah. And the display, is, to your point, it's a 10.9 instead of an 11-inch. So there are some aspects of the iPad Pro that are still Pro.
Right. Yeah, you can get more storage on an iPad Pro than an iPad Air.
Right. for most people, that shouldn't be a thing. But to your point, I also, if someone is going to ask me which iPad they should get, the vast majority of people are going to hear an iPad Air, the new iPad Air with an M1 processor. Get it. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I am with you on that. And bonus for a lot of people, you have colors. So there you go.
Yeah, fair. I think the sound system is probably better. The speaker system is probably better in the iPad Pro. It's a 4-speaker system, isn't it?
No, it is not better than the iPad Pro.
No, I'm sorry. It is better in the iPad Pro.
Oh, yeah, it's probably better in the iPad Pro, yes.
And the camera is not as good, but I mean, like, who uses the camera? I mean, the FaceTime camera, the front camera, I'm sure is.
The FaceTime camera is the one that I care about on an iPad.
Right. I would guess, and I have no data except for projecting my own experience, I would guess that the front camera on every iPad is used 10 times more often or 20 times or 50 times more often than the back camera on an iPad. I'm sure there are people who use the back camera on an iPad. I just don't think that it's, you know, most people are not like Spike Lee walking around.
You clearly have not been to high school sporting events.
Are people filming things on their iPads?
The number of parents that stand there and hold an iPad up with the case dangling down basically in front of their face so that they can video what their kids are doing. Huh. It's crazy the number of people that use iPads that way.
Do you remember that thing where I said I had no data and I'm just projecting my own experience?
Yeah. I was fine letting you roll with it.
It turns out that of all the things that I was saying, that was the most accurate.
Yeah. So there you go. For me, if you want to use me as an anecdotal pool of one, I use the front-facing camera on my iPad a lot more than the rear-facing. Yeah, for me, the rear-facing is I'm in a bind and I need to take a photo of something where my iPhone needs to be in the shot as well, which means I'm doing it here in my office. Then I pull out the iPad and take the photo and just don't tell anyone.
Fair enough. So the iPad Air, it will work with the Magic Keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
Apple Pencil 2. Apple Pencil 2, right? It's a fantastic device. It's going to be the right device for the vast majority of potential new iPad purchasers.
Yes, and now it creates a scenario where Apple really needs to figure out what they're going to do to differentiate iPad Pro. And I think considering we have devices where we're not, when I say we, I mean Apple, is not taking advantage of the horsepower, the capabilities of the hardware they've made.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where we are with the iPad Pro right now.
Sure.
So Apple needs to step it up in that area, and then that will help differentiate between products like the iPad Air and the iPad and then iPad Pro. And my guess is maybe because of the hardware that they've been rolling out with M series processors, that next year with iOS and iPad OS 16, that's when we may finally start to see at a software level the differences made more clear.
All right.
I'm hoping anyhow.
Yeah. I can accept all of those things.
Awesome.
Aren't you excited by that? That I can accept.
I am very excited.
Okay.
I am very excited.
Can we get to the exciting stuff? The interesting stuff?
We can, but I think we should talk about Hunter Douglas first.
Good idea.
Yeah. All right. Well, then how about if I talk about that some? Because I'm living in a place where, hey, guess what? It started snowing again today, and now it's cold. And I have crappy windows that are probably, I am not kidding, over 100 years old. And it would be great to have really good blinds that gave me really nice insulating quality. And Hunter Douglas, well, they can do that. And the icing on the cake is that with the quality shades that they're making, they have their PowerView technology, which lets you automate what you're doing with your blinds. And it works with HomeKit. So you can have your blinds automatically open or close based on the time of day, or like in my case, I didn't bother to check the weather. So I didn't know that it was going to get really cold and snow today. But I could have had a whole HomeKit set up that watches for the temperature to get low enough and then automatically closes the blinds for me. That would have been wonderful. So this is just really cool. And now I really need to get some Hunter Douglas shades in my place with PowerView technology driving them so that I can be even more smart home awesome than I am. So in the meantime, here's what everyone else needs to do. Visit hunterdouglas.com/ACM today for your free style Get Smarter Design Guide with fresh takes, creative ideas, and smart solutions for dressing your windows. That's hunterdouglas.com/ACM for your free design guide. And hey, thank you, Hunter Douglas, for being our sponsor.
Indeed. Thanks for being our sponsor this week. We appreciate it very, very much. Let's see here. Looking at the things that I was most excited about, that would be the Mac Studio, the Studio Display. Is that what they're calling it?
The Studio Display.
Studio Display. Excellent. Yes. And then the M1 Ultra processor that they announced. So it's like, what is it? It's M1 Max, M1 Mega Max. Wait, what's the?
It's two M1 Maxes fused together.
But there are three. There's the M1. Is it just the M1?
The M1 Max Pro.
And M1 Pro, that's it. And the M1 Max. Mm-hmm. And then the M1 Ultra. So it's a fourth version of the M1 processor. And what I cut Jeff off from saying was that it is two M1 Maxes glued together.
Yeah, like literally, they just use super glue. It's weird.
So what they actually did is, according to Apple, they bragged about it quite a bit in the press release, at the very least, saying that they're using something, what do they call it, Fusion?
Ultra Fusion.
As a way of joining these processors together rather than simply sticking them both on a motherboard and letting the motherboard do the joining, as it were. According to Apple, that makes it orders of magnitude faster than simply sticking two systems on a chip on the same motherboard.
Yep, that's a really great description. Yes, and because of the way they fused all this stuff together, it appears as a single processor to applications. So I believe that means that developers don't have to do anything to take advantage of the extra processing power that's in the M1 Ultra. They just get it for free.
According to Apple, that's the case. You don't need to recode anything to basically use all those cores, which according to Apple would be necessary otherwise if it wasn't for Ultra Fusion. So Ultra Fusion makes the Mac OS and any applications you're running look at these two super glued together processors as one processor. And that does, in fact, seem cool. Now, I am trying to do my best to not just suck in Apple's propaganda as gospel. But from what Apple says, this thing is way faster than way faster than anything using as little power as it uses. And Apple was a little bit sort of squirrely with how they were saying that it is faster than I've got a quote here. It delivers 90% higher multi-threaded performance, very specifically multi-threaded performance, than the fastest available 16-core PC desktop chip in the same power envelope. That is really specific.
That is very specific. For the people where those numbers really matter, that's very significant. But yes, that's very specific.
It is very specific.
If it helps.
Yes.
If it helps, yes. Benchmarks for the Mac Studio are coming out even as we record, and they're showing that the Mac Studio way, way outperforms the Mac Pro.
Wow. Wow. By the way, the 27-inch iMac is just gone from Apple's.
This replaces it.
Right.
Yeah, at least for now. I mean, Apple can make a 27-inch iMac again, but I think the 27-inch iMac Pro, I think that's kind of done now because we have the Mac Studio.
The 27-inch iMac, the regular 27-inch iMac, is also gone.
Right, right. Yeah. So this replaces the 27-inch iMac and the 27-inch iMac Pro.
Yes. And to that, by the way, this show is going to go more than 30 minutes. I'm just guessing. I mean, we've yet to hit 30 minutes, but this one's definitely going to go longer than 30 minutes. So Apple did also announce the Studio Display, which unfortunately is a 27-inch display. I was really hoping that Apple was going to, bump us up to 29, 31, 30, 32 even.
I have a hypothesis.
Okay.
And yes, I would have liked to have seen this display larger, but I think that Apple had two things that really drove the size. One was trying to hit a specific price point and not go over it, and the other was potential supply constraints and getting a 27-inch panel
5K
is, yeah, it's currently a lot easier to do that than it is to get, say, a 30-inch panel.
Yeah, that's fair. And this thing has a much smaller bezel, though it does still have a bezel. I'm looking at a picture of the Studio Display on the, I think I've got the current, is there a 2021 iMac 27-inch? I don't think there was.
No, I don't think they updated it in 2021.
I have the 2019 one, and I'm wondering if there was history. Sausage. Gonna make some sausage. 27-inch. Yeah,
you get that sausage going.
Yeah.
Did you launch Mac Tracker?
No, that would be the thing to do.
That would totally be the thing to do.
Okay, regardless, the form factor I don't think changed. If this thing has a much bigger bezel than the new display, but the new display does still have a bezel.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think for a lot of people, this display is going to be exactly what they're looking for. 5K, 27 inches.
Yeah.
And it has a USB Thunderbolt hub built in.
Yeah.
You can power a Mac laptop from the Thunderbolt port on the display. And it has a camera built in.
Yep.
12 megapixel camera. So you can do FaceTime or whatever video chatting you want to do. And then with the 6-speaker system with spatial audio built in, it's like for a lot of people, this is the all-in-one solution that they need for a display, and addresses the issue a lot of people had, which is, I love my iMac because of the display. I wish I could just replace the computer inside it. And right now that's a thing.
It is expensive. We're still talking about the studio display. It's expensive.
It's a couple $100 more than the LG that people are comparing it to, which is the one Apple was selling.
What is Apple still selling that?
Well, when I checked after the media event on the Apple online store, I could still find the LG 5K display, but it was listing as out of stock. So I think that's a passive aggressive way of not selling it anymore.
Yeah, and I'm not seeing it. Let's see here. I'm not currently seeing it on Apple's online store.
Hold on. Let me do a check as well.
Yeah, you do that.
LG UltraFine 5K display.
Yeah.
Yep. It's still listed at $1,299.95.
Oh, okay. There it is.
You
were correct. I was wrong.
It is sold out.
And just while we're talking about it, the 4K display is $700. It's a nickel short of $700. And the 5K mm-hmm. display, these are both the LG UltraFine. That extra 1K of display is an extra $600. So to your point.
Yeah, but that's almost like doubling the display.
Fair. And it is, what does it cost? What is the price of that?
$15.99? Yes. Apple Studio Display is $15.99. Compared to the LG UltraFine 5K, which is $1,299.95. So $1,300 versus $1,599.
Okay, you can also spend $300 to get the nano texture glass, which basically is a matte finish if you're in a high highlighting environment.
I would like to offer some advice on that.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about getting the nano texture glass, wait until you can look at one of these in person and then decide if the nano texture glass is worth it for you, or if you just need to change your lighting wherever you're going to use this, because a lot of people are finding that the nano texture glass is diffusing the colors enough that they don't like it. Like it's not quite as sharp as they would like it with the nano texture glass.
Oh, well, I'm glad I didn't order one of those then. I got the standard glass. And then you've got, we'll get to that. Then you've got the stand that because it's freaking Apple, right? $15.99 just gets you a stand where you can like adjust the tilt.
Tilt it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For an extra $400, you can get a stand where you can not only adjust the tilt, but you can also adjust the height.
You can adjust the height up. You can't make it go lower. So what I mean by that is the height that it's at with the default stand, that's as low as the display will go with the adjustable arm.
Yeah. Put another way, it turns out that it can't go infinitely lower.
I think the way to buy this display, and frankly, I think this is a way to buy any display at this point, buy the display with a Visa mount. And the fact that Apple doesn't include the Visa mount in the box, holy crap, every display maker includes the freaking Visa mount in the box. Anyhow, get the display, get the Visa mount, and then put it on an arm. That's the way to use a display anymore. Now you can put it at whatever height you really want. You can adjust the distance. If you have a sit-stand desk, you can adjust the height for that on the fly. It's a much better way to use your display. Do not put it on a stand that just sits on your desk anymore.
Good advice. I went ahead and bought the tilt and height adjustable version.
Why didn't you call me first?
With the standard glass. You know, I was like half asleep. I was trying to...
I would have even suggested a good Visa arm for you. but okay.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
You know what? You're going to love this. You're just going to love this display.
To the back of my desk. Get it completely off my desk. That would have been great. I wish I'd asked.
Yeah.
You should have asked. Ichabod completely agrees.
Well, it's because Ichabod's one smart puppy.
Yeah. Now, you can get the Visa Mount adapter. So I'm guessing that's just no stand. And it's the same $1,599.
Yes. Yeah. If you order it with the Visa Mount, then there's no stand to put it on.
Right. So yeah. And I'm sure that Apple's Visa Mount is probably better than most included in the box Visa Mounts. But whatever. $1,599.
It'll be prettier.
Sure. Okay. There we go. All right, so let's get back to the Mac Studio.
Mm-hmm.
I was never tempted by the Mac Mini.
I was. The M1 Mac Mini? That's the first tempting Mac Mini for me.
That was the first semi-tempting one for me. But I was going to... my plan was to stick with the 27-inch iMac that replaced the 27-inch iMac. Or... Mm-hmm. Better yet, the 29-inch iMac that replaced the 27-inch iMac. That was my plan. And then Apple announced this thing. And I may end up having some kind of when Apple announces the M2, but that'll probably be, I'm guessing, at least a year, if not a year and a half. So maybe I'll be banished.
You're going to get to see an M2 earlier than that.
On the Mac Pro?
Yes. Okay. So, as you recall, near the end of the media event, when Apple was wrapping up everything with the whole M1 Ultra Mac Studio stuff, they said, "And we're not done yet. We still have the Mac Pro, but that's for another event."
Did that actually happen?
And.
You choose carefully. Sure. Choose carefully.
Yes, it actually happened.
Okay.
And they also said during the media event that the M1 Ultra is the last in the M1 series. These are things they explicitly said. So what that tells me is that when we get a Mac Pro announcement, which would be totally reasonable at Worldwide Developer Conference June-ish.
Yeah.
That would be the time that we also hear about what comes after the M1 series processors.
Which makes sense. And at that point, I may just be thankful that Apple saved me from buying the M2 Mac Pro, which I certainly don't need. I don't need the M1 Ultra Mac Studio that I got, but I got it. Or I ordered it.
I think it's pretty cool. You got the Ultra.
I don't have it, but I ordered it. I need 24.
No one has it yet. Well, yes. Okay, here's the other thing. When you ordered the Ultra, you also upgraded your ports. So the ports on the front are Thunderbolt 4 on the Ultra, and on the Max, they're USB-C.
On the MAX, not MACS.
On the Studio... On the Mac Studio Max.
M1 Max.
It's USB-C on the front. On the Mac Studio Ultra,
How did Apple actually announce
Thunderbolt 4?
Because I feel like...
You have to look.
I feel like it's M1... I feel like it's... You got to put the M1 in there.
You kind of do. But whatever. Apple's not paying me to say this.
That's true. They're not sponsoring. Call me. They're not. It's not M1. It's not Mac Studio Max. Mac Studio Ultra.
It's
Mac Studio. It's with Apple, the M1 Max or the M1 Ultra.
Yeah. You know, because that's just really great marketing, right there.
Fair enough. Yeah, the Max thing, that's kind of weird.
Yep. So, but anyhow, okay, so on the version that has the Max chip,
Yeah.
USB-C on the front, on the one that has the Ultra chip, Thunderbolt 4 on the front, as I recall.
I believe that is correct. Probably won't really, I don't need it. I just got it. I got it because I could, and because, you know, bigger, better, faster. It's got to be bigger, better, and faster.
Well, your computer will be usable for a longer period of time because it has the more stuff.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Mind you, my current 2019 iMac 27-inch is also plenty usable. First world problems,
sure.
Spoiled, privileged, whatever. I'm excited about this. I haven't had a non iMac, iMac or a MacBook of some sort. I haven't had a desktop Mac in a very, very long time. So I'm excited about it.
Okay. So that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So we know you went with the Ultra.
Yeah.
Did you do any custom configuration on it?
I maybe did get the bigger version of the Ultra with 128 gigs of RAM. My buddy Dave is always telling us that 8 is enough. I have not found that to be the case. I've got 64 gigs of RAM, which is the max, in this iMac, and still run into page ins and page outs with a virtual
memory. Right, but you're using an Intel Mac, not an M series Mac.
Correct.
So the amount of RAM you need does change when you switch to the M series. And yes, you can do 8 on an M series and still do some crazy stuff. But I'm with you. I think in the long run, more is better. If I were to order one today, I would probably be okay with the base model Ultra with the 64 gigs of RAM and 1 terabyte SSD.
The Ultra, right. Okay. Which would still be 20 cores, 48 core GPU, and the same 32 core neural engine. Which, by the way, does right. trillions. Trillions. Let me see if how many trillions. Trillion. That must be in the M1. 22 trillion operations per second for the neural engine.
That's insane.
22
Absolutely
trillion
insane.
Operations per second. Yeah, that is going to be more than enough machine for many people. The M1 Max version with 10 cores, a 24-core GPU, and the 16-core neural engine is also going to be enough Mac for the vast majority of people.
Realistically speaking, and I do consider myself a power user, I would be hard pressed to max out what the M1 Max base model studio is capable of doing.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about insane computing power on these machines.
Insane.
And this is, I'm calling this a prosumer machine.
It's pretty pro.
Oh, it's very pro, but it's positioned as their prosumer machine because the pro machine, they haven't even announced yet.
Fair. The Mac Pro model is increasingly aimed, I think, is increasingly aimed more at science and math than creative pros. I think that the 27-inch iMac that is now gone was a machine that most creative pros would be good with. And I think that the new Mac Studio, which is a fine name for it, is a machine that if anything, bridges that creative pro world and the science and math world, I guess in the rendering world too, like 3D rendering, movie rendering, music,
yeah,
big music projects, things like that. Yeah.
You know, on the science side of things, I'm really curious to see how Apple can make their new Macs fit into that space, because the really serious science stuff that's happening, it's happening on straight up Unix, which yep. means if you're going to use a Mac Pro, you're just using the Unix part of what the Mac can do, and Mac OS doesn't matter. So how is that going to work on the M series chips? Can you just like run a straight up Unix install on one of these?
Well, I'm wondering if this processor at this price, you know, it's interesting, Jeff. The M1 Ultra, the Mac Studio M1 Ultra starts at $4,000, which is a lot of mm-hmm. money for a computer. To be sure, I don't want to minimize that. I don't want to gloss over that. It's a lot of money for a computer today. But on the performance mm-hmm. that you're getting for that money, Apple just, I think, probably leapt ahead, not even stepped ahead, leapt ahead of the competition for the performance per dollar.
Oh, yeah, well, and performance per watt as well. I mean, when Apple rolled out the Mac Studio, what they did was akin to walking out on stage at an Intel event and going, Mac Pro Studio with Apple M1 Ultra chip, and then dropping the mic and walking off stage.
Yeah,
fair enough. I mean, Intel can't do anything currently that comes close to competing with what Apple announced and is shipping with it. When are these start shipping? In a couple of weeks?
They're starting in a couple of weeks. I ordered, and admittedly, I ordered the, I didn't check availability for the M1 Max or the entry-level M1 Ultra. The version mm-hmm. that I got is supposed to ship in the early part of May.
Okay. So, but still, that is way ahead of where Intel is with this. I mean, Intel is hoping to beat what Apple's doing with last year's processors in a couple years.
Well, I mean, this
is crazy. Apple is.
Are you talking when you account for power consumption? Are you saying raw performance only?
Power consumption and raw performance.
Well, but there are people who don't care about the power consumption. Apple is not those people. I am not that mm-hmm. those people. You are probably not those people. I would imagine that many of our listeners are not those people, but there are plenty of people who do not care about the power consumption.
Right, but Intel does, because they have publicly committed to beating Apple. I mean, they were very explicit about their plans.
I missed that. Was that recent?
That's time flies. So I'm trying to remember if it was earlier this year or late last year.
Let's say it was earlier this year, because that would be after a point at which I was not professionally required to have known that.
Okay, well, let's go with that.
Right. Okay. So to your point, for the power consumed, in generating that power, Apple is, you know, leaps and bounds ahead of everybody else. But I think at that price point, Apple is probably ahead even in just raw power too.
You are very likely right.
And so will that change?
My hesitation in giving you...
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead.
No, I just haven't done the research to be able to say definitively you're right.
I haven't either. It just didn't stop me from saying it. And the...
it's
I did say probably. So I'm covered. Completely.
Yeah, you're covered. You're fine.
I'm dating a dentist covered, but I'm covered. I had a point back to your point about how Unix dominates like the science world. I'm wondering if this wouldn't possibly change some of that, if that might bring some of that science back to the Mac where it all started out, or much of it started out.
You know, on one hand, I can totally see that. And I was thinking the same thing up until last night when I was doing a user meetup with Adam Engst and Chuck Joyner, and Adam was talking about the scientific tools that are currently being used and have been used for decades. Mm-hmm. And the problem that Adam saw was that the foundation that all of this stuff is built on is not something that can easily be transitioned over. So there's this stumbling block that Apple would have a very difficult time overcoming to get a lot of that, a lot of the really hardcore artificial intelligence research work moved back over to the Mac. It's just, at least as it stands today,
Apple never puts that work.
Just can't happen.
Apple doesn't put that work into making that happen anyway. Apple, we provided the tools, you know, you're welcome to do something with it. We don't care and we're not going to help. Go away.
Yeah.
Go do your thing. Sorry, which is fair. But getting back into the creative professional world, especially like say the movie editing business, the 3D rendering business, which is probably only going to gain importance as we continue to do AR and VR stuff. That is, Apple should have a very solid competitive edge at this point with this Mac Studio.
I agree. This is a place where Apple now has made it very difficult for the big name PC makers that have historically been the suppliers of the hardware that's used for like blockbuster level movie editing and rendering.
Yeah.
That they can't compete currently with what Apple has released, even with the Mac Studio.
Yeah. One more thing about this, and then we could maybe let this go.
Okay.
I was surprised that Apple's pricing was not more outrageous for things like storage and memory. It is especially with the memory being baked into the chip and not something that you can go to a third party for. I'm surprised that Apple was as reasonable as they are. So for instance, it's $800 for going from 64 gigs to 128. That is a lot of money, to be sure. When I saw that price differential, I was semi-relieved. Which maybe that's Stockholm syndrome. I don't know.
Well, there's probably some Stockholm syndrome happening, but we also have to look at how the memory is handled now. So it's not like the old days, which is actually not that long ago, where you go and buy memory chips and plug them into sockets on the logic board. The memory is now like incorporated right there with the processor, hence system on a chip. All the chunks are right there,
which makes it faster. So, but also means that Apple stays in control, which also means that Apple controls the price.
Right. Yeah, yes, but you can get system on a chip from other companies. So this isn't just an Apple thing. But what that means is that when you go from a 64 gig configuration to 128 gig configuration, they're not just putting more RAM chips in. You're getting a different processor that has 128 gig baked in as opposed to 64.
And I'm guessing, totally, I guess only, that Apple, I mean, if anything, Apple probably raised its margins, but it's just that much cheaper for them to do it this way than it is to buy the third-party DIMMs that then get installed onto the machine.
Well, yeah, it definitely gives them a leg up on performance because you're taking out a lot of physical space where, you know, where the electrons have to go from one part of the logic board to another and then back around again. A lot of that extra space is now gone, which speeds things up. And then they can also build in other efficiencies simply because they control the whole package.
Right.
Still a lot of money.
It is to be sure, it's a lot of money. And then on the storage side, going from, so the Mac Studio Ultra, M1 Ultra, starts at a, am I keeping you awake, buddy?
Totally.
My apologies. Starts at a terabyte. Sorry,
it's been a long couple days.
starts at a terabyte, and then to increase to 2 terabytes, it's $400. And to go to 4 terabytes, it's $1,000 extra, and 8 terabytes would be $2,200 extra. Again, those are not cheap, but I was expecting that to be more.
Yeah, I would have expected more as well. Yeah, I think we're both dealing with a little bit of Stockholm syndrome, but at the same time, the prices are definitely lower than I was expecting.
Yeah, so there we go. And as far as looks, it's a box.
I think that we'll start seeing some physical design changes in the cases starting next year, or maybe this year with the new Mac Pro, announced.
There are some differences.
More significant changes.
I bet you. Okay.
So we'll look at what Apple has been selling for many years now, overall, the designs haven't changed. And I think we'll start seeing some physical cosmetic changes maybe starting next year. Of course, on the other hand, have we reached a point where the form is just what it needs to be? And then that's that?
Probably. I bet you that the Mac Studio is going to look something very similar to this for a very long time. That would be my guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The Mac Studio, that's the form factor for quite a while. I'm thinking more like, are we going to see changes in physical designs on laptops with the new Mac Pro coming out at some point?
Iterative.
Maybe a change there?
Iterative at best.
Yeah. I think you're right.
All right. Well, this is I'm super excited about this thing. It's supposed to ship in early May. My display will ship in April. not that I can do anything with it. I guess I could hook it up to my iMac and then have to
check the compatibility list. Because you might be able to connect it to your iMac.
Yeah, but then I'd be going to 2 displays and then back to 1 display.
Also check the iPad compatibility list because it will work with certain models of iPads. And off the top of my head, I just don't know which models.
I've got the current iPad Pro. I would guess that would be a model that it might work with.
That would probably be a model. So you could use it with your iPad Pro.
Yeah, so very excited about it. I'm excited about the M1 Ultra. I'm hoping that Apple's very carefully worded press release isn't hiding anything. But you said that we've already seen some third party speed tests, right?
Yes,
I haven't seen those.
And just look on the Googles.
I'll do that.
And I'm betting you're following the right people on Twitter that are reposting this stuff as well.
Yeah, but I'd have to actually read the Twitter. Absolutely, I am, Jeff. That's a very good point that you make.
Hey, would someone please send Brian a Google link or an article link where it's talking about performance of the new Macs?
I will find it. By the way, Apple says that the M1 Ultra Mac Studio is up to 60% faster CPU performance than the 28-core Mac Pro, which is kind of a diss on the Mac Pro.
It's totally a diss on the Mac Pro.
Can you buy the new Mac Pro? Let's see. Can you still buy that?
Oh, you can buy the new Mac Pro still. Yeah.
Okay. Here we go.
Apple will let you slit your skin open and pour salt in. They will absolutely let you do that.
All right. So I'm configuring the new Mac Pro with a 28 core. Yeah, that starts at $7,000. That's with 32 gigs of memory, not 64. To my point, by the way, about pricing for the Mac Pro, and I realize it's different memory, it's a different situation, but it starts at 32. To add 16 gigs to that is $300. To add 64 gigs, it's $1,000. To add 64 gigs on the Mac Studio, it's $800.
Mm-hmm.
So again, wow. I was kind of like, maybe it's Stockholm Syndrome, but when I saw the pricing, I was pleased. Or relieved.
Well,
relieved
is a better word. I think for the market that Apple's really targeting with this computer, that market will be very pleased because they're spending a lot less to get a lot more horsepower.
A lot more. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of a diss on the Mac Pro.
Yeah. Which really made their comment at the end of the keynote event really critical because they had to address the Mac Pro. And the fact that they have something coming, and there'll be some other event where that gets announced. Otherwise, there would have been way too many people with way too many questions about what does this mean for the Mac Pro? Has Apple dropped the Pro name completely? Yeah. And does this replace it? And, yeah,
I mean, mind you, there's a ton of stuff that the Mac Pro does that the Mac Studio doesn't. Top of which is use up to 1.5 terabytes of memory, right? The Mac Studio maxes at 128. The Mac Pro maxes at 1.5 terabytes, which is 12 times as much as the Mac Studio. Of course, that is an extra $24,000 if you buy it through Apple. And you know it's got the breakout box thing that you can do what do you call those?
An external card chassis? Is that what you're thinking of?
That little bus thing that they're doing, to where you can stick the Afterburner card.
Oh yeah, I can't remember the name and. Looking it up would involve putting my hands back on the keyboard.
Right. So, I mean, there's lots that the Mac Pro still does, but I'm thinking if you're listening to this show and you're thinking about the Mac Pro, if you can, wait for the M series. And if you bought a Mac Pro already, Sorry about that. Unless you need all those things that you can't get the next
time. Well, if you bought a Mac Pro just recently, my assumption is that you're buying it because it's part of your business and you need to get as much computer as you can when you need it. And then when you need to get something else that does more, okay, then you get that and get rid of the old thing. So for those people, it's not a big deal because they got the machine that they needed to get when they needed to get it. And then a new Mac Pro will come out and then they can get that instead.
All fair. All right. We are so over our time. We are an hour and 10 minutes, man. Our new half hour show is going really well.
Go us.
Really, really well. All right, Jeff, let me do this thing here. And then let me say that is this week's context machine. This is new stuff here. It's going to take me a few years to get this down. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, you can contact us over at contextmachine.io. You can find me on Twitter at GeekTales. You can find the show at Context Machine and Jeff.
And you can find me on the Twitters. I am Jay Gamut. And hey, thank you to Hunter Douglas for being our sponsor. Visit hunterdouglas.com/ACM today for your free Style Get Smarter design guide with fresh takes and creative ideas and smart solutions for dressing your windows. That's hunterdouglas.com/ACM for your free design guide.
And our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass was recorded by Boom just for us. And Jeff, that's it for this week, man. What do you say about that?
How exciting.
Yeah. Sorry about going so long,
I'm going to go back to sleep now.
Yeah, fair enough. You had me back to sleep.